This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning, and thanks, Dave, for the wind chill index. I have to tell you, I was just out on the WGN Storm Center patio, and yeah, you can feel it out there. It's the first 30s I remember in quite some time. So it's a little brisk out there, but a beautiful sunny Sunday. And let's get the week off to a good start. Now, the results of the U.S. presidential election were watched all over the world. Some countries with fear and trepidation, others with a different kind of interest. Among them was Russian President Vladimir Putin, who had this to say.
And he spoke about resuming and restoring relations between Russia and the United States.
Мы понимаем и отдаем себе отчет в том, что это будет непростой путь с учетом той деградации, в которой, к сожалению, находятся отношения между США и Россией.
We understand that the way to that would be difficult, taking into account the current state of degradation of relations between the U.S. and Russia.
И это, как я уже многократно говорил, не наша вина, что российско-американские отношения находятся именно в таком состоянии.
And as I have repeatedly said, that is not our fault that the Russian-American relations are in that poor state.
Но Россия готова и хочет восстановления полноформатных отношений с Соединенными Штатами.
But Russia is ready and wants to restore the full-fledged relations with the United States.
That's Vladimir Putin and his translator, and that's your Russian lesson for this morning here on the Sunday Spin. Well, joining me now, we have our roundtable from last week, and everybody is got their full servings of crow here as we talk about kind of dissect the results of the Tuesday's election results. Pat Brady, former state chairman for the Illinois Republican Party. Bob Sector, my former colleague, who's now director of investigations for the Better Government Association. And David Yepsen, the retired director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Good to be here.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Well, come on now. I mean, so Pat, you were the most vociferous among Republicans I know against Donald Trump.
Yeah, and for good reason. I still believe, and I want to give him the time to govern, and I think we all should. And these protests and other comments coming from the other side, I think, are unfortunate. But yeah, I my issues with him were on policy, that I didn't see him articulating conservative principles, and we're supposed to be the conservative party, from trade to entitlement reform to tax policy to health care reform. Now, that being said, in the last 5 days, he seems to have...
Or 72 hours.
72 hours. He seems to have opened up more to typical Republican positions on what he might do. So, again, that's a good sign. But the point is, whatever my issues were with him before, which I think you have an obligation to point out if you disagree, we have an obligation not to root against the country, and I think we need to give him time to govern. I think everybody does, including Hillary Clinton.
David, I'm curious. You know, you were former national political columnist and reporter for the Des Moines Register. You know presidential politics probably better than anybody I know. And have we become so dependent on the polls that we just kind of accept that, and now we see that the polls are thrown back in our face?
Yes, in a word. and it's especially true, unfortunately, because of the limitations that are increasing in polls. The number of landlines is down. 60% of the people in Illinois use a cell phone or a smartphone. And so when you have this kind of thing going on, pollsters miss stuff. People don't reply to pollsters the way they used to. It is interesting to me, and there's going to be a big discussion in this country about polls, that some of the polls that we're using online methods rather than telephone calls actually had a better result. Polls that use panels of people that they would go back to constantly had better results. And so, I think that's going to be one of the things that gets changed quite a bit, is the use of polls and the amount of attention we pay to it. I think I said last week that there was a phenomenon out there called the shy Trump voter.
Right.
People who were reluctant to say, who that they were for Donald Trump. And that turned out to be there. Pollsters have to figure out a way around that. Online polling may be a way to get around that, where people will say online they'd vote for a guy like Trump, but would be are reluctant to tell anybody else, another person, that they would.
Maybe a sign of that digital anonymity that is part of social media. Because...
Right, and you can have larger sample sizes. I mean, there's a group of a couple students at the University of Illinois is reading about TweetSmart, where they were able, through an algorithm that they have, to look at the way tweets were going, and they were forecasting a Trump victory. Well, what is that all about? You know, the polling has changed, and it's going to have to change some more.
Well, and you know, I had people, and David, you're familiar with this too, is people every election kind of ask about, you know, for lack of a better term, a silent majority out there that isn't reached by polls and that kind of thing. And for the most part, you could kind of dismiss that, but you can't dismiss it anymore.
No, you can't. And the other thing is, so what if somebody's doesn't want to say on Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, they change their mind? I mean, Americans can change their mind. They do so very quickly. And there's enough of them in the electorate that it's going to be really impossible to predict. I think a lot of people went into that voting booth, maybe not a lot, maybe 10%, and said, well, I don't know what I'm going to do, and they pulled the lever for Donald Trump. I think we saw something like that in Reagan's election in 1980, up until the very end of that. People thought Carter was in the hunt, and that didn't break until much later on in the race.
Bob, I mean, you and I have sat and done these elections for how many years, and this was something else.
Yeah, well, for me, the strangest takeaway from this is that, you know, if there was one national consensus, is that we were a country that rooted for George Bailey, and now at least half the country is rooting for Mr. Potter. It's
once again
strange.
Bob is speaking for himself and not
yes,
the BGA. Okay,
but yeah, just remember. I mean, a couple takeaways. Now, you know, Pat, before we went on the air, was talking about what he thought. Hillary Clinton is now blaming James Comey, the FBI director, for losing the election for her. Who knows whether that's true or not? One thing that this does show is that voter suppression works. You know, you've got two ways to win an election. You can gin up your support, or you can try to stop the other people from voting. And in many states, it worked really well. The registrar in Wisconsin, I saw yesterday, was suggesting that there were 41,000 people in Milwaukee alone who couldn't vote because of the voter suppression ID law that Scott Walker put into place. So you got to factor that in there, too. And remember, the other thing is that both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton got far less votes than Mitt Romney and Barack Obama did in 2012. And one other thing to remember out on top of all of this is that Hillary Clinton actually won the popular vote. So, you know, try to figure that out.
It's a great combination. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. We're here with our political roundtable, Bob Sector, Director of Investigations with the Better Government Association, Pat Brady, former state Republican chairman, and David Yepsen, the recently retired director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. We know that House Speaker Paul Ryan did not embrace Trump's candidacy, but the Janesville, Wisconsin Republican is sounding very excited about a GOP agenda that a president could sign when he spoke with reporters after the election.
Look, it's not just the health care law that we can replace, because we now have shown the willingness and the ability to do it. There are so many more things that I'm excited about. Think about the laid-off co-workers now who see relief coming. Think about the farmers here in Wisconsin who are being harassed by the EPA and the Waters of the USA. Think about the ranchers in the West who are getting harassed by the Interior Department or the laid-off timber workers. There is relief coming. This is good for our country. This means that we can lift the oppressive weight of the regulatory state We can restore the Constitution. Think about the conservative Constitution-respecting judges that will be nominated. This is very exciting.
Now, that's Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House. Pat, you know, after having said, you know, you're not convinced that the president-elect is a conservative.
Well, his rhetoric in the campaign, it was not. But that the point being, he's really done a turn the last couple of days. And if you have leadership like Paul Ryan, and those are big issues. That's why Donald Trump won, because there are a lot of people that are very angry about with the EPA, the overregulation, with the trend that Hillary Clinton said she wants to destroy the coal industry. There are a lot of people in this country that are very angry, and we've said all along that Trump tapped into that. So there is an opportunity for Republicans or conservatives to actually govern now and govern well and do what we've wanted to do for 8 years. So it's a great opportunity.
But I think the big question is how much of this presidency and the new government order of the United States is going to be driven from the White House versus Congress?
Well, he has a great opportunity here to do the right thing, to tone the rhetoric down, get back to more conservative positions, and do what he said he was going to do. I'm not talking about the wall or some of the other nutty stuff, but the stuff about there are people that middle-class working people that have really been hurting in the last 8 years, and that this administration, the Obama administration, has done nothing to help them. So I think Speaker Ryan is correct to say there is relief on the way.
Well, and Rick, Trump has sounded a very pragmatic tone. A good example is health care. During the campaign, it was, oh, we'll get rid of Obamacare. And what does he do? He tells the Wall Street Journal a few days ago, well, I'm willing to keep pre-existing conditions. I'm willing to continue to allow people to stay on their parents' health care system. So the man is already moving to the center. You know, and the other point I wanted to make was, you know, maybe we'll finally get something done about the issue of income inequality in this country. Donald Trump got elected largely because of non-college whites who used to vote Democratic and who switched. It's like Reagan Democrats. And Democrats have been talking about this issue for a long time. Liberals have been talking about this issue for a long time. Republicans had better, if they got to the White House on the strength of that vote now, people who voted for Obama before because they were upset, now they voted for Trump. And I think it's the country listens to that, Republicans listen to that and try to do something, it could be a real positive to come out of this election.
Yeah,
Bob.
Well, what's fascinating, though, you're talking about, you know, within days of his election, he's rapidly backtracking on positions he took with great fervor. Now, if you think people are cynical about government, those people who actually thought that he was going to build a wall, and now you've got Newt Gingrich coming out and saying, well, that was a great campaign device. Well, you know,
I think that's going to be a new phrase that we can employ now,
yeah,
is campaign
just,
device.
I mean, you know, you're right. The wall, or as Elizabeth Warren said, it's a stupid wall. But, you know, if you're going to say something with great fervor and confidence and bring people along with you and then within days change your positions, I mean, what does that say?
Well, it's just like you can keep your doctor and costs won't go up.
So, well,
I mean, it's politics. And the reality is the issue's the way, and I think David said it perfectly, healthcare is a great example. Pre-existing conditions and being able to stay on your policy longer, those were Republican ideas initially, but the Obama administration had to ram this through with no Republican votes. This is a Democrat bill, so we're basically getting back to where we were 7 years ago.
And that Obamacare or Romney Care or the Heritage Foundation market-based idea, which is this is all based on, is a perfect example of what's going on. They trotted that out to try to kill Hillary Care back in the early 90s, which was kind of universal health care. Then they forgot about it. Then Mitt Romney resurrected it in the mid-2000s, and it was embraced by Republicans. And then suddenly, when Barack Obama came up with it, it was terrible. It was socialistic.
Well, because it was a lot different than Romney Care.
No, it wasn't.
He said it wasn't going to. He said he made two promises to the American people. You can keep your doctor, and costs are not going to go up. I have my own insurance, and I lost my primary care doctor because of Obamacare. And I don't think Hillary Clinton lost this election because of Comey.
You did not lose your primary care doctor because of Obamacare. Come on.
Bob, you want to go talk to my doctor? You go talk to him. He's out in Geneva. The point is
that might be the problem. He's out in Geneva.
Here's the point, though, Rick. I don't think she lost because of the Comey thing, which I think is irresponsible of her to point out the FBI director like that. That's an institution we rely on. She lost, I believe, because in that week, people started making their health care elections, and they saw that their premiums were doubling or they were losing their primary care physicians. So there are a lot of policy decisions made by the Obama administration that I think in the long run really hurt Hillary. That's why her voters didn't turn.
Actually, I think that's a very good point because, yes, health care elections were coming up and that kind of thing. Yeah. We have to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. We're going to continue our roundtable with Bob Sector, Pat Brady, and David Yepsen.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin, and thank you, Dave, for our first wind chill advisory.
This is the day one of wind chill.
The very first one of the year. Thank you so much. I'm glad I brought the winter coat.
We now have that to add to all of the landmark events that have happened in the last few weeks here.
It just figures, doesn't it?
Yes.
You know, it's, what more can you throw at us? Oh, yeah, how about a wind chill? Thank you very much.
Haven't seen any snow yet.
All right. Now you jinxed
it.
Now you jinxed it. You're done. I'm hitting your cutoff button right there. I'm doing the panic button right now. Thanks a lot, Dave.
You're welcome.
And you said that so sincerely, too, I might add.
I will hit my button. Goodbye.
Thank you so much. Well, welcome back to the Sunday Spin. Just on a personal note, I want to thank Daryl Windle. Daryl is sitting in with us today, and you know my great love for the Literacy Volunteers of Illinois, and I mentioned last week was their big Scrabble tournament, and they had silent auctions and all kinds of gifts and everything. And Daryl was kind enough to bid on the opportunity to get to sit in and listen to this madness that we call the Sunday Spin. Daryl, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Well, you're very welcome, Rick. It's fun to see how the sausage is made.
It's not always pretty, that's for sure. But Daryl, thank you so much. And thank you so much for your support for the Literacy Volunteers of Illinois. LVIllinois.org is the website if you can help them out in any way. As I've always said, as a writer for a newspaper, if you can't be for literacy, what else can you be for?
It's a great organization. I'm so glad for all the work they do.
Thank you, Daryl. And thanks again for your help, and thanks for joining us this morning. One of the things with my panel here with Bob Sector, Pat Brady, David Yepsen, I went through, as I do after every national election, I went through the exit polling. And frankly, there's the issue, as I've said, the blueberry in this cherry pie that Illinois is. But one of the interesting things I found is the votes of women, and particularly in the national poll, Illinois, too, the votes of white women. And I just want to go through this as a factor. Now, we know that turnout wasn't as great as it was in 2012. We know that African-American turnout was not as great. But I think we had something like at least 2 million fewer votes cast nationally than in 2012. But let me go through these numbers. And I know how much numbers translate on radio, but please be patient, okay? So first, white voters made up 70% of the electorate, 58-37 for Trump. Illinois whites, 65% of the electorate, but they split equally, 47-47. Okay? So that's all white voters. Now, go a little deeper, okay? White women, okay? White females made up 37% of the electorate nationally. And they favored Trump 53% to 43%. In Illinois, white women made up one-third of the voters, but they sided with Clinton 52% to 45%. Now, take it even further, because we talk about, you know, and there was Hillary and the deplorables and all that kind of thing. But let's talk about college graduate white women, okay? One-fifth the voters nationally. Clinton, 51-45. In Illinois, white college graduate women, 18% of the vote, roughly one-fifth. Clinton, 64 Trump 33. I mean, so you had the whole idea of this historic presidency, woman nominee, major party, first woman president. Nationally, college graduate women, 51-45. What does that say?
She ran a very unaspirational campaign. We didn't really hear much about her being the first woman except early on. But
well, but, her, her but, whole, but there's also – well,
let me finish, though. But she never – as opposed to Trump, who actually said what he was going to do, however simplistic or agree or disagree, with Hillary, her whole platform was, well, go look at my website. And it just was a very I've been saying this for a year – it was not a very inspirational campaign.
But if I mean this very honestly, if you ran it as a elect me because I'm a woman, you know, that's the gender card kind of thing.
And she played it early. She didn't play it later.
Well, but I don't know that it's a card to play.
I don't think it's a good card to play either, but she didn't play it towards the end of the last 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, well, I think she acknowledged that she's not the campaigner that either her husband or Barack Obama were. She's not a very exciting, dynamic personality in the campaign trail. And there's one other thing that that I don't think can be dismissed. And it's very unfair and very sexist. But when women talk loudly and forcefully, they're called shrill. And when men do it, that's
bravado.
Bravado and presidential. And it's a tough calibration to make when you're running for president of the United States and you're a woman. And I don't know how to resolve that issue, but it's something you have to consider.
David, I was, you know, when I thought about this whole campaign and the aftermath, and I thought if somebody could lose this, it would be Hillary Clinton. and right. Only because of, you know, because I covered her in 2008 when she ran against Obama. The kind of the sense of entitlement and I deserve this kind of thing. And it continually came through.
That's right. Her unfavorables were very high. We've talked about this before, that we've elected one of the most unpopular presidents in our history. I think the most unpopular since we've started in modern times in Trump. But Hillary Clinton's unfavorables were equally high. So you had two flawed candidates. People had to get by that and decide, and they opted for change. I mean, you talk about women voters, but there are also a lot of male voters, too, who said, hey, we want something different. We want some change here, and we're tired of the way things are. She represented the status quo. He represented change. I think it had nothing to do with gender.
No, but to me, it's still somewhat astonishing. You know, I'm a father of two daughters, and you know, the opportunity that women had to cast a vote. And I've said this before, and please remember, I mean, when Carol Moseley Braun ran for the U.S. Senate, and, you know, that was a historic breakpoint. But I also said, just because somebody's a woman or somebody's an African-American, whatever, that it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that's not your issue, okay? That's a factor to add in. But oftentimes, these trailblazers, as they are not the best messengers for carrying that.
Well, there's another I'm sorry. Go ahead, David. Sorry.
No, I mean, I think particularly true with millennial women. I mean, our daughters, some of this stuff is no big deal, this glass ceiling stuff. I mean, they're not as radicalized about this, as energized about this, as older women.
Kind of like them seeing the Cubs win. They don't appreciate the history.
But give Hillary Clinton credit. I mean, even in losing, you know, it's like a trench war in World War One. Even if you got shot, you fell on the fence and you enabled somebody else to cross off your back. And I think that's what's happened here. She's made it easier for other women. It's just not that big a deal of a driver in our electorate. I mean, we talked about, you know, Tammy Duckworth. Well, that wasn't a big deal. Illinois has done this before. So I just think that the uniqueness of that, it doesn't register with a lot of women. They're interested in other issues.
But there's probably another issue along with the gender issue, is the damage that this has done to the Democratic Party. I haven't seen a turnaround like this since Illinois led Arizona by 12 with 3 minutes to go in the NCAAs. or Arizona led Illinois.
Well,
and I mean, the turnaround of from the fortunes of the Republican Party's dead, there's no unity, to now we have the House, the Senate, 33 governorships, two-thirds of the state legislatures, and the presidency.
But, Bob, we were talking a week ago, we were talking about the new Republican autopsy, and
right,
now it's
exactly
the Democrat autopsy
exactly
that has to go through.
Yeah, one of the things that this election has kind of busted all these stereotypes that we talked about. We were sure beforehand, and obviously we're wrong about this, that because she was a woman, that was going to energize a woman. That was going to energize a whole bunch of people. On Trump's side, he was saying all sorts of outrageous, nasty things, and we were sure that was going to turn off people. And it turned off some people, obviously, but clearly it didn't turn off enough to make a difference in the outcome. So some of these symbolic things that we look at are probably, you know,
overstated.
And, you know, the one thing I really wonder about this election is that, you know, politicians copy each other. And, you know, my fear is that you're going to see 1,000 little Trumplets on the campaign trail yelling and screaming and insulting people for lower office because it worked.
We'll talk more about what are the prospects for the political future in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. We're here with our post-election roundtable of Bob Sector, Pat Brady, and David Yepsen. And David, I know you wanted to interject. I'm sorry we had to go to break. David?
I just wanted to make the point at Pat talked about conservative principles, and the message of this election is Republicans have got about a year to produce. They won the narrowest of victories. They didn't win the popular vote. They won the narrowest of victories, and they did so because a small segment of the American electorate that had been voting Democratic switched and voted for Republican. This is very much like the Reagan operation and the Reagan election of 1980. And so the Republicans had better produce, and people better be feeling it within a year, because we're heading into the off-year election. If they don't, those same voters are going to be moving back out of the electorate. I think Republicans have got an opportunity here. And the second quick point, we all thought the sky was going to fall on people when Reagan was elected. I was sent out to Washington to do stories about the first 100 days. Almost none of that stuff happened. And Trump has already signaled a more moderate tone here. Yeah, he may be backing off things he said in the campaign, but I think that that's a good signal for the fact this guy wants to get some stuff done, and his party understands that they've got a short window here to start producing results.
Is it a matter he wants to get stuff done, or is it now the weight of the presidency has fallen on him? I have to tell you, when I saw him in the Oval with Obama, it looked like, oh my God, I won this thing.
Yeah, well, if he doesn't recognize, well, it's kind of like the candidate with Robert Redford.
Yes, exactly.
But if he doesn't recognize that, the people like Paul Ryan, the people around him do, and I agree completely with David, it's a very short window for the Republicans to do something here. A little bit, I think Reagan had a much bigger victory than Trump did, so probably even more urgent that they get something done. But he got to set the right tone, and the people, particularly on the left, it's so disturbing to me. There's so much screaming, yelling, and protesting about the election results. I mean, nobody shout about Trump more than I did, but the election's over, he won. And we need to accept that, and we need to allow him to govern.
And I have to say, I mean, I totally respect First Amendment and protest and peaceful protest and all of that, but I'm having to find a new way to get to work every day because of it. But no, but it's kind of like, you know what? Yeah, this is the results, and we all have to accommodate the results. You may not like it, but we all have to accommodate the results.
Maybe it's just because I've lost so many, I'm more used to losing than more willing to accept.
You don't know how to respond to
I know,
it.
I know.
But no, I mean, seriously, Bob, I mean, I do respect the people that but game over, okay? There is no redo here.
Well, I think, now I don't really know this, but I think they're responding to the things he said on the campaign trail, which were bigoted, racist, misogynist. You can go down the list of
sure
things. Now, if he comes out and says, just kidding, folks, I suppose that might go
it
a
It was
long
a
way.
Campaign device.
It was a campaign device. But, you know, the question will come when, you know, when he actually takes office, when we see what the what the makeup of his administration is, and we don't really know that yet, although there's some indicators of what it might be. So, but the trick for him is that he was so much more forceful and so much more cocksure of himself on the campaign trail that if he backs off of that, he risks alienating a bunch of people who voted for him because he was that way. He told it like it is. And so he's in this kind of trick bag here. If he is more moderate, which might make his presidency more of a success, he risks alienating the very people who came over to his side because he was the guy who said everything very forcefully, and he told it like it was.
Hopefully he just concentrates on what's good for the country, the whole country. Once you become president, you're everybody's president, not just that little piece. But I can't get out of here, Rick, without saying what a big night Illinois Republicans had in the House, winning the six races, picking up four seats. A big, big night for Governor Rauner in 2018. I think we go in with a tailwind.
Well, and we're going to talk more about that in coming shows.
I had to get it in. I couldn't pass that up.
I'm sure the check's in the mail from Governor Rauner. Okay.
No,
because he's only made $188 million last year.
Well,
so
that or comes from trial lawyers or labor.
Like a Republican operative. Yeah. Yes. And let's talk about Leslie Munger for a moment here.
But one point to what you had talked about earlier about the issue of Trump and being a conservative, and you're seeing this, and Dave, I want you to weigh in too, is about maybe he's more like a John Lindsay type Republican from New York kind of thing.
Well, he's got and Chuck Todd said this about 2 weeks ago, if we had a candidate that appeals to those upper Midwestern states that Reagan used to carry and we used to do well in, well, he actually ended up doing it. So he struck a chord there. He needs to listen to those folks and come up with policies that everyone can accept that will move the country forward. And I've said all along, maybe it's time for a big infrastructure bill.
Well, and it's very funny, Dave, because like 8 days ago, when there was talk about doing an infrastructure bill, everybody on Capitol Hill was, oh, poo-poo, no. Yeah. All of a sudden, guess what happened in the last 8 days?
Well, it's broader. Right? Infrastructure meaning broader than roads and bridges. It's talking health care and other things.
No, but Dave,
you're talking about the very thing that the Republicans blocked when it was Barack Obama's idea. So,
what are you going to do, Bob? You got to move forward. I mean, we can talk about Barack Obama all you want.
Hold on, Dave.
Well, but the infrastructure bill is a way to produce some results fairly quickly. That's what I'm talking about. And the Republicans saw that. I'm glad they can read election results. The country has a crying infrastructure need. It's a way to put people to work very quickly and do an economic thing. All they got to do now is figure out how to pay for it.
There you go.
Yeah, well.
All right, gentlemen.
Thanks.
I'm sorry. That's all the time we've got. I want to thank Bob Sector, Pat Brady, Dave Yepsen. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. And, yes, we can't forget Daryl sitting in as well. And we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.